You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent this morning. And have you ever tried an espresso with a little bit of smoked honey, some elderflower syrup, raspberries, and a dash of pepper? We are about to wake up to a whole new world of coffee drinks with ingredients you've likely never considered before, creating coffee that's more of an experience than just a drink. And you can call in with your comments or coffee questions at any time, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org for our guest, Ryan Casteles, founder and CEO of Discourse Coffee with locations in Milwaukee. He's the author of The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. And Ryan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Lee, thank you so much for having me this morning. I'm so happy to be here.
So I just opened your book, The New Art of Coffee, and right out of the gate, you're saying people have been asleep at the wheel when it comes to coffee and it's time to wake up. Well, Ryan, my coffee is as caffeinated as it can be. What do you mean?
I love that you pull out that quote because it's one of my favorites from the first section of the book. When you look at coffee as an industry, you see this incredible third wave movement that's been going on since about the early 2000s. And the third wave was coined by Trish Rothgeb out in San Francisco at a little coffee shop called Wrecking Ball. And the entire idea of the movement is essentially adding transparency to the coffee process, right? So now instead of the coffee that you're consuming being this kind of blank, nameless thing that might come from this country or be a collection of coffee from 50 different farms, now we're celebrating the exact roaster, we're celebrating the exact producer, how it was processed, the variety, and that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But in third wave coffee, because the focus was so strong on the voice of the farmer and the voice of the roaster, the voice of the barista largely got lost. We kind of functioned as translators, as mouthpieces for the people who came before. And so for many years, innovation in the coffee space kind of slumped. We saw the traditional pumpkin spice in the fall and your lavender in the spring, right? Like we see these things year and year again. But the pace of innovation, of change, of storytelling, of narrative really, really, really slowed down because the entire focus was placed on telling the stories and conveying the narrative of the people who had come before. And so very much what we try to do with The New Art of Coffee, very much what we do at Discourse is to say, hey, these are valuable and important and beautiful stories, and we should be sharing them with our guests. But also, us as baristas, we have stories and we have valuable thought and we have valuable impetus, and we can actually create things with these beautiful coffees that tell our stories in hand with the stories of the farmers and the producers before us. And so the entire impetus of our shops, of the book, is to reinstate creative agency in the modern barista so that we can again bring back the drive of innovation, not only at the production level, but at the shop level as well.
So this third wave was about identifying where your coffee is coming from, how it's sourced and who the roaster is, and getting very specific about its origins. But you were developing this fourth wave, which is we're going to take this now and it's going to be an evolution of not just the sourcing and where it's grown and how it's roasted, but what we do with it after that. And so where did this idea come from, Ryan? How does coffee barista like yourself in Milwaukee invent the fourth wave of coffee?
Man, my heart just like fluttered a little bit when you said invent. there's been a lot of people in this mission, and you know it's been so incredible to be kind of at the heart of this movement. It was a wild story, man. I was an opera singer most of my life. That was kind of my path. I sang heroic tenor, so pretty high up there. And I was studying opera in Italy when I fell like madly in love with coffee. And so when I got back to the States, I had my mom at the time like drive me to Target, and we bought one of those little like $90 steam espresso machines. and I brought it back to my dorm room and I started making coffee for my friends in the dorms. And I loved it. I loved the feeling of exchange that you got from just creating something for somebody. Fast forward 7 years, you know, I ended up graduating with a degree in psychology. And so, of course, I worked as a service industry professional, which I loved, right? Like it was the most fulfilling and satisfying job I had ever had. And so a couple years into that, I was living in Door County actually, and I realized, wow, I am spending a lot of time thinking about coffee, making coffee, buying coffee equipment. And at this time, I had a little cafe in my house, please. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm thinking about this all the time. I have this equipment. I should probably do something with this. And so we found a space, and it was. It's hard for me to even describe now what this space was like. It was in this condo association of shops, right? And the association was about 50% full. So pretty empty. And there was one space that was literally the laundry room of a restaurant that had been in this association of shops. And the guy who showed it to me was like, we got one more space, but I doubt you're going to want to see it. It's pretty bad. It was a laundry room. Nobody wants it. And so we go into this space, and I spend 3 seconds in there, and I'm like, yeah, love it. I'll take it. So we get this little laundry room space. We spend about 2 or 3 months renovating it, and there is no street front signage. We are in the middle of a courtyard that, you have to walk down 6 steps to get to. And even when you do walk down those steps, we're located in the middle of the building that you just passed. So you have to like do a double take to try to find us. It was like a whole adventure just to get to us, right? And coffee, especially first, second, and third wave coffee, is a convenience business, right? This is something that people often do on the way to where they're going. And so we had to step back and say, okay, wait, there is nothing convenient about this location. Nothing. So, how do we bring people into the door for coffee when it is out of their way, right? Like, this is not something that is traditional. And so, what I did was I started turning to places in the hospitality space that had already done this very, very, very well. And primarily, what I was looking for were chefs at really high-end restaurants in very remote locations, things like Favakin or El Bulli, who were able to draw diners from all around the world to eat in these remote locations. The other thing I looked at was cocktail bars. And what are cocktail bars doing to stay relevant, to stay interesting, to stay at the top of the curve? And so we took these kind of concepts from the mixology world and from the world of high-end restaurants, and we said, how do we smash bang fusion these two things into the world of coffee shops in a way that we can actually get our guests to want to get out of their cars and try to find us to have this cup of coffee? And so that was really how this whole fourth wave movement was born. It was out of necessity of how do we create an engaging enough guest experience that that guest wants to make this the thing they do, as opposed to the thing they do on the way to where they're going.
And that's how Discourse Coffee was born, with our guest Ryan Castellez, author of The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. Let's go to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234. Therese in River Falls, good morning.
Good morning.
What do you drink?
Can you
Therese?
hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you
What
hear me?
yeah.
Okay. I'm calling because I always, when I get to see one of those fancy coffee machines, I always ask the people behind the counter to make me their favorite, just because it's exciting to see. And the best cup of coffee I had with that so far has been a honey lavender coffee cappuccino. It was delicious.
Where'd you have it?
Down in Georgia.
Honey lavender coffee. I'm trying to put that together in my
Sounds
head.
delicious.
Yeah, Therese.
Exactly. Exactly. It was not something I ever would have ordered myself, but the guy behind it, he's like, okay. And people were shocked that I always say, make whatever your favorite is because they know coffee.
Oh, I appreciate that. I've never been so bold, but I might consider it. Ryan, if somebody came up to you at Discourse and said, "Make me your favorite," what would it be this morning?
Oh, that's such a tough question. Well, first, to comment directly, Therese, we'd love to have you into the shops. We just added a latte to our menus called Flora, and it's a honey lavender latte. And we spice it up just a little bit further. We do a beautiful addition of rose water, which just complements the florality of that lavender so well. And then we do a candied lemon powder on top, and that brightness just pops all of those flavors and really enables you to fully taste that profile. So I'd welcome you to come in and try Flora. I think you'd absolutely love it. I think my favorite on our menu right now, and where I would kind of point people who come in, is a really, really cool little experience called To All a Good Night. And this was developed by one of our drink makers, Alana Sashik. And it's essentially a walk through the winter woods, but in liquid form. So we have a black tea from our friends at Reishi that we oversteep. And then we do a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful plum syrup with a cornucopia of spices. And we put those things together with some oat milk and we steam it up and then we pour it on top of fresh foraged pine powder. So pine needles that we've grated into a powder. So when you bring this to your nose, you get these waves of plum and oat and pine in a way that is so invigorating and so of fall and of winter. We finish that off with some pine needle smoke. So we actually smoke out the glass with the pine needles and then a little slice of bruleed plum to kind of bring some of those hard cracked sugar notes back into the latte. It's such a fun adventure. It's such a fun experience. And I think it's really indicative of what we try to do at Discourse right now.
To all a good night. Give it a try at Discourse Coffee. Our guest is its founder and CEO, Ryan Castellez, also the author of The New Art of Coffee, from Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. You can be part of our conversation, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is author, artisan, barista, business owner, Ryan Castellez from Discourse Coffee in Milwaukee. His new book, with his radical recipes, is The New Art of Coffee, from Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. We'll get to your questions and comments in a moment at 1-800-642-1234 or emailing ideas@wpr.org. But Ryan, I'd like to get right to one of your recipes, and thank you for the permission to reprint them. With these recipes, you can find this morning on our website at wpr.org/mornings. And let's start with the Holy Pin, a recipe based on the movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And I can only imagine what might go into this drink. Tell us about it.
I like you, Lee. We're starting right in the deep end of the pool. Holy Pin. And this is one of the crazier drinks that we've ever really put out into the world. A couple of years ago up in Door County, we did a menu called Classic Films. And the idea behind the menu was every drink is going to represent one classic film. And so we did The Godfather with a drink called The Don. We did Blade Runner with a drink called Tears and Rain. And we did Paddington with a drink called Darkest Peru. And then finally, Monty Python with a drink called Holy Pin. And, really the process and over the years of us making drinks, we've kind of come to develop a language. And that language is, how do we tell unique and engaging stories through liquid and through everything that surrounds that liquid, through the glassware, through the aroma, through the appearance? And so when we dial in a drink to a story, we take core narrative elements and then we really dive into each one of those core narrative elements and we say, well, how do we translate this core element into part of this drink? And so for Holy Pin, we took some of the most iconic moments in the movie and translated them into drink ingredients. So examples, right? We knew that we needed the aroma of elderberries. This was like a baseline, right? Like your father smells of elderberries was like, okay, we need this. We knew that we needed somehow to incorporate a grenade or a holy pin. And so for the grenade, we actually took grenade ice molds and we froze coconut water to touch into the coconut moment in Monty Python. We froze coconut water into these grenade ice molds, and that was the ice for the drink. So when the drink was finally done being built, we dropped a literal ice grenade into the drink and it would bubble up a little bit. So we had a glass that was suited to contain that explosion. The drink itself was a question of, okay, what would be in the chalice, right? Like if these guys would ever find that chalice, the Holy Grail, what would be in the Holy Grail? And so we're thinking about this, and we're like, well, it would probably be something kind of related to wine. It would probably be lightly fermented. Who knows how long it's been sitting in that cave? So we kind of took back and said, okay, how do we translate into this coffee drink? So the first thing we did was we made a non-alcoholic Lambrusco, essentially. And Lambrusco, for those who are unfamiliar, is like a sparkling red wine. So really, really, really beautiful profile, quite complex. And so we took a ton of things, Lee. I mean, we took frankincense and black pepper and elderflower and smoke and grape skins. And we tossed all of this together into what is essentially a faux Lambrusco. I mean, licorice root and burdock root and dried mushroom and green peppercorn. We put them all in a sous vide bag, and we infused all of those things into the grape juice with the grape pulp for about 4 hours. And then we strain it and we put it into a soda siphon. And that soda siphon allows us to add that carbonation. So from there, we had this deeply complex faux red aged wine that was sparkling. And to that, we could play. So we made a beautiful kind of espresso concoction where we blended the espresso with that elderflower syrup, a little chocolate essence, and some black pepper. And we blended that up and then poured it on top of the Lambrusco. And so you got this gorgeous drink served in this chalice that had this beautiful deep red brown tonation, and then this top of this gorgeous head from the emulsification of the crema from that shot of espresso. And so, you know, the guest is looking at this drink and it's in this chalice and it's overflowing from the bottom with a fog of elderberries that we're using from dry ice. And then we take a little grenade made of coconut water and drop it in, and it boils over, and then the boil over makes that fog intensify. And right, and this whole moment is this moment of discovery, right? It's this moment of all of this work that came before, all of the heady, almost nonsensical to most people, like preparation that went into this moment, right? Was the guest seeing that grenade fall, seeing that drink runneth over, seeing that fog pillow, and having them have the experience of being in a position where they are discovering the Holy Grail for the first time, right?
Wow.
And so all of that is part of what we do as liquid storytellers, to be able to bring the guest into the moment, to bring the guest into the memory, into the story. And we have these very beautiful five elements to play with, right? We have aroma, we have presentation, we have palette, we have proportion, and we have purpose. And if we can manipulate those five elements, we create the ability to deeply engage our guests in stories like discovering the Holy Grail through Holy Pin.
Ryan Castellez, author of The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail, also from Discourse Coffee, and evidently a knight who says neep. So you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234, where Whitney in Gladstone,
Me,
Michigan, standing
join.
by. Whitney, good morning.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, great. Yeah, so wow, that was a ride listening to that story of that Holy Grail. I can't, I'm not going to try to compete with that, but I'm actually in the process of opening up a small coffee shop in my small town of Gladstone, Michigan, where my purpose is to not have coffee be this transactional sort of action. So I don't have a drive-through, and I am wondering what your top three tips are for coffee shops with no drive-through to get people to get over that inconvenience of having to get out of their cars, especially in the snow.
Awesome. Whitney, I think you've come to the right person to ask the question. Ryan, I only have a minute for your answer, though.
Oh man, this is going to be the toughest thing I've ever done. Okay, let's dive in. Whitney, thanks so much for the question. I've never had a drive-through, and I absolutely don't think that you need them to be a successful coffee shop. Top three things I would say is one, celebrate your people, right? People are going to come more so from the drinks, they're going to come for the people who you have working behind the counter. So really celebrate your people. Do it through social media, do it in person, however you can. Celebrate your team because your guests are going to come back for your team. Two, focus on seasonal drink development. So focus on unique and engaging drinks that are going to bring people into the shop, right? That are going to draw them out of their cars into your building because they need to be there because they need to try this thing. And a little book called The New Art of Coffee is a great place to start for ideas. And for the third thing, engage people in your space. Use your physical space and program it. So bring people in through events, bring people in through tastings, bring people in through public cuppings. Anything that you can do to get people to engage with your space and with your mission is going to bring people back. And the little bit of convenience that they lose is going to be far outweighed by their desire to support you and your mission.
Ryan, thank you for that answer. And Whitney, by the way, if you wanted to see the Holy Pin recipe online, it is at WPR.org/mornings. And we have more recipes to come with our guest, Ryan Castellez. He is the author, coffee shop owner, and inventor, entrepreneur, and you're a storyteller when it's all said and done. And you can join us with your stories about coffee as well at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent today. And even if you're not a coffee connoisseur like our guest, there are still some simple techniques you can use to find the best flavor from your coffee, regardless of the beans you buy. We are at the forefront of a revolution in coffee drinks with Ryan Castellez, the founder and CEO of Discourse Coffee in Milwaukee. He's also the author of The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. And you can call in with your questions about coffee, or comments or espresso experiences are welcome here at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. The recipes that Ryan has for us this morning, you will find on our website at WPR.org/mornings. And Ryan, before we get to another recipe, I want to talk about what we can do to make the most out of our coffee at home when we brew it ourselves. You're right that grinding coffee or the extraction process is very important in the new art of coffee. When I'm making coffee at home, what should I be considering to get the best cup, the tastiest cup, the most from my beans?
I think it kind of goes down to really two core philosophies. One is, what is the best cup for you, right? And coffee is this really, really beautiful thing because it is so diverse. It is actually more aromatically complex than even wine. And so there is such a level of preference within coffee once you start to really understand what's available to you. So the first thing I recommend to everybody is go out to some really good shops around where you live and try as many different coffees as you can. If you normally just get drip, see if they have pour overs. If they have pour overs, try a coffee from Central America. Try a coffee from Africa. Try a coffee from a high altitude in Colombia. Try an anaerobically fermented coffee from Panama, right? Like the world of coffee is so huge now and always has been, but with the innovation in the last 20 years, truly ginormous, that the first step is really discovering, what coffee do you like? What resonates with you the most? What do you enjoy? And when you discover that, you can be much more intentional about the coffees that you buy and end up with way less duds, right? If you know exactly what origin you like, you know that I like a Guatemalan and I like a chocolatey cup. So I want a washed Guatemalan that's just going to be clean chocolates in my cup. Then every time that you go out to buy coffee and you buy a washed Guatemalan from a producer that you love, you're going to love that cup, right? Because you know that you love this thing. So the first thing I always tell people who are trying to up their coffee game at home is learn a little bit more about yourself. Like learn exactly what it is that you really enjoy in a cup of coffee, and then talk with your local baristas to figure out how to get there. The second thing that I always tell people is there is, you know, especially in the coffee world, right? We put a lot of attention on espresso machines. Espresso machines are like the sexy thing that everybody wants on their counter, and they're going to be super cool. And yes, espresso machines are very cool. But what really makes the biggest difference in how that morning cup of coffee is going to taste is the grinder, the much less sexy grinder.
much messier
when we
too.
Grind coffee, Yes, much messier, much messier, but much more essential. And you can actually counteract that mess through a little thing called the Ross droplet technique, which is you take a little spray bottle, you fill it with water, and you spritz your coffee in the hopper of your grinder 2 to 3 times before you grind, if you're single dosing. And what that does is that little bit of water breaks up the static. And without the static, the grounds don't stick to the grinder and fly everywhere. They go right through the chute into your collector. So a little spritz of water is going to help that grinding process be a little less messy for you. Science is crazy. grinders themselves, you know, are so, so essential. Essentially what we're doing when we brew coffee, right, is we're extracting flavor and aromatic volatiles from this mash of beans. It's bean water. And so how that bean is crushed is absolutely instrumental in how that coffee is going to taste. Without going too deep into the chemistry and the science here, what we're really looking at is consistency. So if we have a consistent grind, then all of that coffee is going to extract the same. If we have an inconsistent grind, we're going to have parts of that coffee that we're over-extracting, which is when we start to taste bitterness, acridness, all of the characteristics of coffee that a lot of people don't really resonate with. And some of it that is ground too coarsely is going to be under-extracted. So it's going to be kind of sour, kind of papery, kind of watery, right? So the only part that we really want is right in between, that golden zone of extraction. And so the more consistent that our grinder is, the more consistent and beautiful our coffee is going to be. So those are my two first pieces of recommendation for everybody is figure out which kind of coffee you love, and then figure out a great grinder that is going to work really, really well with that coffee. And then brew it. And, you know, for brew methods, my favorite for home, actually, man, is a little brewer called the Clever. Have you ever seen a Clever, Lee?
I have. I've seen this, and you talked about the sexiness of the espresso machine, this elaborate machine, but the Clever Dripper is a real simple, I mean, you just put it right on top of your cup of coffee, right?
It's the best, man. I love it. And for people who are at home looking to do a non-fussy, you know, and I get it, right? Like, it's 2024. We're all busy people, right? To carve out the time in your morning to do the whole song and dance of the pour over is amazing for some people. They worship and love that routine and that ritual. And for some people, they're like, man, just give me my Mocha Master, you know, like, give me that drip. And I think the Clever is like a perfect in between. So the beauty of the Clever, right? It combines immersion and paper filtration. And I love a French press, but something with French presses that has never fully resonated with me is the metal filtration. I really like a cleaner cup of coffee. I don't want that grit at the end of the cup. And so the Clever is like my perfect home brewer. And I think most people would find this to be their perfect home brewer. You take your coffee, you grind it, you put it in the basket. You add your water just to the top, put on the little cover, you let it sit for 3 minutes, and then you put that brewer on top of your cup, of your mug, and it activates a little flow restrictor in the bottom of that brewer that lets all of that coffee now drain through that paper filter. So you get all of the clarity and the nuance of a pour over. You get the body of a French press, and you get it with the effort of pressing a button on your drip pot. I think it is the number one thing that home coffee drinkers could buy for themselves just for the ease of brewing and the taste and texture of the final product. I think are just superlative to most other easy home brewers on the market.
Well, and it's relatively inexpensive when you compare it to, say, an espresso.
So cheap.
Yes.
Yeah, go out to Breville and get, you know, your $1,300 Oracle or your $20 Clever.
We're talking about coffee with Ryan Castellez, author of The New Art of Coffee, from Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail, and it's time for our next recipe. As I understand, Ryan, this is your best-selling one at Discourse. It's called Moonwater. It was also the first recipe at the coffee shop. What's in a moonwater?
Yeah, man, this latte is really near and dear to my heart. We actually made this one before we even had a coffee shop. It was midnight, and I couldn't sleep, and I stumbled downstairs to my kitchen, and I made myself a steamer, and usually steamers were something that could help me kind of calm down. And steamers are just, steamed up milk. And I had some honey, so I tossed some honey in the steamer. And in my sleepy delirium, right, I look over at the table, and I see cinnamon, salt, and pepper. And I'm like, ah, yeah, why not? So add cinnamon to the top, which is miel, a classic combination. And then I added the salt. And then I added the black pepper and I tasted it and I was like, wait, what? Like, this is actually so good. So I didn't really sleep that night because I was thinking so much about this now. Like, oh my God, why is this so good? And so the next day I did a copious amount of research, and ordered in probably six different varieties of cinnamon, probably a dozen different varieties of salt, and then honey. And we started to get to work to figure out, okay, how does black pepper and salt and cinnamon all play together? And how do the varietals play together? And we probably tried 30 different combinations before we settled on the blend that has become our moon water mix and been our most popular latte for the last 7 years. In every location we've ever been, in every shop we've ever opened, moon water is our leading latte. And it is a very simple composition. It's espresso, local wildflower honey, and then we do this spice blend. And the spices we settled on were Ceylon cinnamon, which is a lighter, softer, more floral cinnamon, Tellicherry black pepper, which is a softer black pepper as well, and then applewood smoked sea salt. And so the idea is that the pepper and the smoked salt, right, these are quite aggressive flavors, as is cinnamon. And so when you have three aggressive flavors, how do you balance them in a way that feels symphonic, like cacophony, right? And so we look to find varietals of these spices that were softer and more fragrant and more delicate, so that the three could dance together instead of pushing each other off the stage. And it is one of the most delicious lattes that I think I've ever had, and a lot of our guests have ever had. It's nostalgic, it's comforting, it's warming, and it's everything you want when you're going for a cozy, comforting drink.
You can find the recipe of the moon water at WPR.org/mornings or in Ryan Castellez's book, The New Art of Coffee from Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. So this one's rather simple and straight ahead, Ryan, but there are other recipes in your book that have complex flavors, some unusual ingredients like fennel foam and squash puree. How difficult is creating these beverages for a fast-paced coffee shop, and how many drinks are left on the cutting room floor?
Those are great questions, Lee. Most is the answer to the
Yes.
second one, of the drinks that are left on the cutting room floor. About it, like one of those albums, when they talk about, and my background's in music, so when you think about an album that maybe has 10 tracks on it, well, that probably came from 40,
Yeah.
right, or 50. And so that's very much the way that our menus work. We have a lot of ideas at the top. And then when we boil down those ideas, it's okay, well, these are the ones that are actually going to be the ones with legs. And then once you get to those concepts that you love, it takes a varying amount of time to put together, right? Sometimes you strike magic, right? Like moon water is like, okay, I know this is it. Like this is the framework, right? And then sometimes it takes 20, 30 iterations. We have a drink in the book called Matrix Reference that took us over 30 versions to get right. So there are, it really varies. What I will say is over time, as you get better at doing this, it's faster, right? You start to understand a little bit more of the mechanics at play, and you start to become a lot better at how do I make a good drink quickly. And now, what I tell my drink makers, the ones who have been with us the longest is, y'all, it's easy to make something that's just tasty, but what's it mean? What is the purpose? What is it saying? What do I feel when I drink this? Right? Those are things that are worth fighting for because they're so much more difficult to create. And so that's really where we spend our time now is how do we create things that make people feel things, right? Because we can make a delicious latte any day of the week. Just our plain lattes are delicious. So how do we elevate? And then second thing is how do we do this at a fast pace, right? And this is something, Lee, that I will admit is not my forte. But I would have every drink be a 15-touch drink that takes 10 minutes if it was up to purely me, right? So I have an incredible business partner. His name's Sean Liu. He's our director of operations and our full partner throughout Discourse. And he has really, really played an insurmountable role in taking these crazy, brainy drinks and translating them into something that can be done very quickly at the bar. So, you know, I think a lot of people, when people hear this stuff, they're like, oh, this has got to take forever. Right. You know, our average drink times are really not that much longer than your average coffee shop. And that's because we've really dialed in to what we call magic moments. So Sean and I have spent a lot of time identifying and going through each step of the build process for each of these drinks and saying, okay, what do we really want the guest to see? And what can we do behind the curtain? And there is a certain, you know, something that I've learned over the years, Lee, is when somebody comes into discourse, they're coming in with a set expectation. And that set expectation is that this is going to be an elevated take on my coffee. And so what we need to do is we need to balance speed, which half of our customers are expecting, with craft, which the other half are expecting, right? So if it takes 20 minutes, nobody likes that. But if all we do is pour one syrup into a cup and then hand you a latte, that's not why you're here, right? Like that's what everybody else is doing. And so we've identified what we call magic moments, the moments of highest impact to the guest, that when they see that, they feel, yes, I'm at discourse. I'm getting an elevated craft experience. But it's also not going to take them 30 minutes because they're not flash making all of these syrups to order, right? So Sean has been instrumental in creating this magic moment system, identifying the magic moments for each of our drinks, and then taking away everything else. So everything else happens before you get there. We're a prep heavy coffee shop. And we can talk more about the economics of that if you want. But it's a really, really, really prep heavy coffee shop. And that enables us to then serve you quickly.
Ryan Castellez, founder of Discourse Coffee in Milwaukee, author of The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. Still time for your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or your coffee comments, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and perhaps our guest sounds a little bit like a mad scientist, a clever inventor, or maybe an abstract painter, the way he creates with coffee. Ryan Castellez is the founder and CEO of Discourse Coffee. He's the author of The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail, and still time for you to join us at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We have one last recipe this morning, Ryan, that you've shared with us at WPR.org/mornings. Motorhead, is there oil involved?
Kind of, but not motor oil. Okay. You know, we hold that one up. That one got left on the cutting room floor. The oil we use on this bad boy is actually pork fat. So, you know, a lot of people, this one really geeks out a lot of people. It's the latte that won over my business partner, actually. Sean tasted this one and was like, yep, that's what I'm about. Let's go. And really, it's simpler than people think. So when I was staging a couple of years ago, I was doing a stint as the interim beverage director at a beautiful place here in Milwaukee, now called Butcher on Pleasant, but at the time called Butch and Butcher. And in my time there, a big passion of mine, Lee, is waste reduction, right? We love to create what's called a closed loop ecosystem. And what that is where the restaurant or the cafe or the bar is reutilizing all of their waste in other products. To me, creating these circular economies is essential for the future of our industry, and it's something that I absolutely love. And so as my first step in creating our drink list for Birch and Butcher, I went through kitchen waste, and I saw everything that the kitchen was throwing away. And two of the biggest things on the list were apple cores that they had been using for parfaits, the apples themselves, and the other was pork fat. They butchered all their own meat in house. And so they had all of this pork fat left over. They just couldn't use it all. And so I kind of looked at myself and thought, okay, well, what pork fat, apples, what do we do? Like, and it hit me kind of all of a sudden that caramel is the perfect base for this.
Yeah.
And so we made a caramel. We took the apple cores, we melted them down with the sugar, we added the cream, and then when we would usually have added the butter, we added the pork fat in its place. And it created this incredibly unctuous, delicious, rich, sweet, smoky, salty caramel that we just I just fell in love with. And so then it was, how do we build a latte around this? So we took the caramel, we added root beer bitters for complexity and backing, espresso, oat milk, and then finally we topped it with a fresh Granny Smith apple powder. So we took the slices of the apples, dehydrated them, ground them into a powder, and then seethed them over the top of the latte. So you get this really fine Granny Smith apple powder. And then we finish it with a little bit of smoked salt just to bring you back to the grill where that pork would have been made, right? And so the idea on this latte was, we're building something around this beautiful ingredient, and what does this feel like now when it's done? And what it felt most to me was like, man, I feel like if I rode a motorcycle, I would totally want to drink this latte. And so it was Motorhead. And several years later, Sean Liu, my business partner, he rides motorcycles and falls in love with this latte. And I'm like, I freaking knew it. This is for the motorheads out there.
You can find the recipe online again at WPR.org/mornings in our guest's new book, The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. Ryan, Lois from Madison called in to say she puts homemade apple butter in her coffee, and she says it's delicious, but
Ooh.
She'd also be interested in knowing from you of how to best experiment with coffee drinks at home. What would you recommend?
Such a good question, Lois. I think the biggest thing, right, is just enabling yourself to play. And this is something that we talk a lot about in the book, right? At some point in our lives, Lee, and I don't know when it is, and I'd love to find the moment so I can just remove it from the timeline. We start to really put all of our focus on the product. What is it that we come out with, instead of the process? And when we're kids, when we're young, right, the act of playing, it's never about what we make. It's about doing the thing. It's about exploring. It's about playing. It's about curiosity. It's about fun, right? It's not about the result. That is the mindset that you need to be in if you're creating drinks at home. If you're playing with coffee, if you're playing with cocktails, if you're playing with food, right? Like, I encourage my baristas to play with their food, right? Like, think and play and dream and explore and discover. And if you want to put apple butter in your coffee, it's probably freaking delicious, right? If you want to put whatever you have in your fridge in your coffee, so what if you take a sip and it's terrible? Pump it out, make another cup of coffee, right? Like, and if it's delicious, you just discovered something beautiful. You just learned something. You just created value for yourself, right? And so the ability to forget about the product and just focus on the process, just focus on play, is what is going to enable you to become an infinitesimally better drink maker than you could ever imagine. And outside of play, buy the new order coffee and put those two things together, and you're gonna have such a good time experimenting with coffee at home.
Hey, Ryan, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Lee, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much.
Ryan Castellez is the founder and CEO of Discourse Coffee. He's the author of The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. And the recipes we talked about this morning you can find online at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thank you for being a part of today's morning show. It was produced by Courtney Everett, Trevor Hook, Mackenzie Crummy, Joel Patnod, Royce Padeswa, Avery Rogers, and Joe Tarr. Our technical director is Tyler Ditter. Keegan Kyle, executive producer. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. Stay tuned for 1A next here on the Ideas Network.